This episode was damn good. I learned a lot. I hope you do too. And it is with Dr. Mariana Figueroa. Dr. Figueroa is the director of lighting research, the Lighting Research Center, and professor of architecture at the Rensselaer Polytech Institute. Dr. Figueroa is well known for her research on the effects of light on human health, circadian photobiology, and lighting for older adults. Her research is regularly featured in the national media, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Scientific American. Dr. Figueroa has also brought attention to the significance of light and health as a topic of public interest through her TED Med talk. Please welcome to Trends with Benefits, Dr. Mariana Figueroa. All right. Well, thanks so much for making the time. Let's start off with a simple one. If I wake up early in the morning and walk outside and look up at the sky, what happens?
Well, it's what you're actually supposed to do, because we're supposed to wake up outside, not inside the built environment. That's what we were basically created to do. What really happens is your internal clock, the biological clock that you have in the brain, will sync up with the solar day. So you really will be telling your body time, that it's morning or evening or, you know, whatever time you get. So you are basically informing the body that it's time, and that you are in New York or in LA or in Australia, wherever you are. So you're syncing up to that outdoor environment.
Got it. And how does waking up early, going outside, watching the sunrise help me sleep at night?
It's very important because sleep has two components. One component is what we call sleep homeostatic or sleep pressure, which is really how many hours you've been awake. And the more time you've been awake, the longer you're awake, the more sleep pressure you're going to have. The other component of sleep is the impact that the circadian system has on it. And what that waking up in the morning and telling your body what time it is, it's basically telling your body, now it's daytime, it's time for me to be active. Or now it's nighttime, it's telling me to be asleep. So what it does, it really tells your body to do the right thing at the right time. So it helps with sleep, because it now will help your body know that it's the right time to fall asleep. And everything that needs to happen for you to have a consolidated night of sleep will happen. So it's almost like a signal to your body to do the right thing. You know, I use an example where I think people can resonate to that is, you know, go to the bathroom. You don't go to the bathroom a lot at night. And that's for a reason. Your body, you know, your kidneys slow down at night so that you don't have to wake up every 2 hours to go to the bathroom. Now, if you're not aligned, if that's not happening, so in other words, if your circadian system is not telling you the right time of day, you can't sleep because you have to get up and go to the bathroom because you don't have that time information. So it's as simple as that, but it's just basically knowing, it's informing your body to do the right thing at the right time. And part of it is prepare your body to go to sleep and maintain sleep.
Got it. So by going outside early in the day, it's anchoring my circadian rhythm and setting a kind of biological timer, which will tell my body that in 14, 16 hours, it's going to be time to go to bed.
Correct. And that you are in sync with your external watch. That's what it's really doing, right? And what happens when you have jet lag is you lose that synchrony. So you need to start getting light at destination so that slowly your body can move back or move forward to sync up again with the time of day at destination, for example. So it's a combination of being synchronized with the external environment so that it tells your internal clock and all the clocks in your peripheral body that you got to do something at this time, something else at this time, something. So it's telling the body time.
Got it. And how would you describe the circadian rhythm? What is the circadian rhythm?
So these are all biological rhythms in our body that repeat at approximately every 24 hours. Okay. If you stay in a dark cave and you have absolutely no input from the external environment, you're going to continue to have circadian rhythms. And what that is peak and trough every approximately 24 hours. But in humans, that's not going to be exactly 24 hours. It's going to be 24.2 hours. So that's why it's so important for you to go out in the morning every day, because what you're doing is you're resetting your biological clock so that these circadian rhythms are running with a period of 24 rather than 24.2 hours. So that sync up is basically telling your biological clock now runs with 24 rather than 24.2 hours. Now, circadian rhythms can run without any contact with the environment. So again, if you're in a dark cave, you're going to continue to have these circadian rhythms. So they're really generated by a biological clock in the brain. They don't need the external environment to exist. What they need the external environment is to maintain that synchrony between outside and internal clock.
I was reading in Matt Walker's book, Why We Sleep, the story of Professor Nathaniel Kleinman and Bruce Richardson in 1938 going into the Mammoth Cave in Kentucky and spending 6 weeks in complete darkness, complete with beds that they had to put the legs of in water buckets so insects didn't crawl up on them at night. And they made that discovery that you will continue to have your circadian rhythm devoid of any light, but it will get slightly off track. It's more than 24 hours. So as you said, going outside in the morning and having these various light cues essentially anchors you to that 24-hour clock to keep you on track.
Correct. You need that resetting every day. So every day it's like moving the, you know, they refer to as moving the hands of your clock. So every day you got to move the hand of your clock. You actually have to speed up your clock a little bit because your clock is slower than 24 hours. So every day you speed it up, you get it. And then the following day, you got to speed it up again. And you have to do that daily because otherwise you just drift 10, 15 minutes a day.
Got it. And how does watching the sunset impact your sleep?
Well, it's very interesting. There's a lot of work being done looking at us having what they call dual oscillators. So in other words, we have two types of oscillators. One is the daytime or the dusk, and the other one is the dawn oscillator, so dusk and dawn. So the idea is that one syncs up with, you know, sunrises and one syncs up with sunsets. The goal is always the same. The goal is that that clock will be ticking at 24 hours and you will be in sync with the external environment. Now, there hasn't been a lot of work looking at that dual oscillator in humans. I mean, a lot of the work is done more with fruit flies and other species that it's easier to work with. So what we typically do is we know that sunrise, day is starting, it's time for me to be a daytime person. When it's sunset, it's actually the opposite. What it's telling me, it's time to start slowing down, getting ready for sleep. So that's what basically the sunset tells you, or the reduction in the light exposure in the evening.
So is it true that watching the sunset will secrete a healthy pulse of melatonin, which will help you go to sleep a few hours later?
Well, in general, if you are entrained or synchronized, you will start producing melatonin about a couple hours prior to your normal bedtime. Okay, so if you tend to go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, you start producing melatonin around 8 o'clock at night. Now, if you obviously watch the sunset in the sense that you, if you stay in darkness after that, after sun goes down, what you're doing is you're reinforcing to your body that it's now darkness, that you now need to start producing melatonin, which then will lead to sleep. If the opposite occurs, where you're exposed to too much light in the evening, what happens is you delay that melatonin production. And by delaying that initial signal to the body that it's nighttime, you're delaying the information that it's time to go to bed, it's time to get ready for bed, it's time to become now a nighttime person instead of a daytime person.
So how does looking at smartphones, iPads, computers, all that fun stuff impact your sleep after sunset?
Yeah, you know, we've done some studies with that. And the interesting thing about these self-luminous devices is that they're, it's not as much as that they're very bright, because obviously they're brighter things than the phones. But what happens is you're looking at them very close to your eyes. So even though they're not that bright, they are giving you light. So the likelihood that that light will delay that onset of melatonin production, and therefore that signal to the body that it's nighttime, it's greater when you're being exposed to that kind of light after sunset. What happens basically, and you know, one of the things that I always say about self-luminous displays is that even if you filter it out, because you know, Apple now and other, you know, they have the night shift mode and all the things that you remove the blue light because we're more sensitive to blue light. Even if you have that, you got to remember you're activating your brain by doing an activity like that. So you have the alerting part that you may not physiologically delay your production of melatonin, but you may be giving some alerting signal to your brain that will make it harder for you to fall asleep.
Right. Yeah, you're continuing to think at a high capacity. I've always felt like whenever I couldn't get to sleep, it was the result of not clearing my mental desktop from the day. And I was constantly ruminating on the things that I had to do the next day. And it's amazing how much the brain can keep you awake. Man, I've found that journaling has been the biggest sleep aid for me, because it's like this repository for all of my neurotic thoughts, all of my tasks. Like I can just brain vomit it out onto the page, and then it feels like it's leaving my brain, and I can get to sleep
clearing,
that night.
Right. Yeah. It's clearing it. And you know, and I think that we can blame light up to a point, but I don't think it's just light, right? I think it's really, it's a behavior thing. And what I always say, what light does is light enables you to do the behaviors that will affect your sleep, right? Because if you're in the middle of Iowa with no lights, no phones, no connection, what are you going to do? You're going to fall asleep after sunset, right? But if you're in New York City, that's not what you're going to do. So it's not the light per se. Like I said, even if you put low light levels, if you filter out the blue light, you take all the precautions, it only does half of the job. The other half is really up to you to just say, all right, I'm turning it off. I'm going to go to bed. So it's...
Productivity in the classic Western sense of the word, is not conducive to complete darkness.
Correct. That's absolutely right. But again, if you have lighting, if you have restaurants open, if you have, you're going to do it, right? Because we're all social species. We want to do the social part. Even social media, that's what's doing. It's keeping us awake because we're communicating with our friends through phones. And so I don't know. I think the lighting is to blame, but not completely.
Well, I had never considered the point that you just made about light being so connected to productivity, which makes total sense, but I just hadn't considered that link. But how, you know, now a lot of this, the science that's really interesting me that's coming out with people like Dr. Andrew Huberman is how much, you know, getting deep sleep, getting even moments in the day where you take a break from work to lie down and take a nap can skyrocket retention, learning, lowering anxiety. It's almost like we've, as a species, started to speed up so much that we're just grazing information everywhere, but we're not deeply understanding any of it. So this kind of metaphor of turning the lights off on civilization as a whole could allow us to retain all this this blizzard of information that's coming in, and you know, be able to navigate our lives in a more organized and calm way, which seems like the real project of humanity right now.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, we talk a lot about light, but it really is light and dark. I mean, that is really what we need. We need light during the day, bright days and dark nights. And it's as simple as that. And I think what's happening is we as species are, first of all, we're in the built environment. So the light that we have during the day is too dim, right? And so you're talking about people being sleepy after lunch, post-lunch dip, and, you know, being sleepy during work. Well, crank up the lights and you're going to see much, much better, sort of, or at least less, we have been able to see less sleepiness, more alertness just by increasing the amount of light during the day. On the other hand, we're extending that dim light all the way to the time we go to bed. So we have no chance of having bright and dark. We just have continuous dim. And I think that's really messing up with our circadian system. And that's impacting not just health when you talk about diabetes, obesity, cancer risk, things much more serious than just being sleepy during the day and not being as productive or as able to absorb the information as we would have been if we were maintaining that very robust light and dark and awake and sleep pattern.
Right. Well, if you're, 10,000 years ago in a hunter-gatherer tribe where you're outside most of the day, it's very bright out the day. So, I mean, if we have brains and bodies that are roughly the exact same as they've been for the last 200, 300,000 years, why wouldn't we be biologically adapted to be taking in bright outdoor light for most of the day? It makes total sense.
And we are. And what happens with the built environment is that it, because of energy, which I'm all for energy efficiency and so on, but I think we got to a point where we're doing too much. We're dimming the lights way too much because lighting is a great tool for reducing energy consumption in a building. So, you know, nobody wants to turn down the HVAC because you want to be comfortable. But you can turn down the lights and you can still see, especially now with self-luminous displays and so on. So what happens is we're in a dim environment the entire day. It's just a lack of bright days. So we talk a lot about light at night, about the self-luminous displays, and I absolutely agree with that. But that becomes more serious because you just didn't get enough light during the day. So your sensitivity to light at night actually increases because you didn't have enough light during the day. So I think that, you know, I do think we need to start rethinking how we do, how we design and how we implement lighting in the built environment. I mean, some of the studies we're doing with Alzheimer's patients, it's absolutely incredible. By giving them that robust light dark pattern, they are improving sleep, they're improving, depression. So they're much, much less depressed. They're reducing agitation. So you clearly see that there's an improvement just by simply changing the lighting and giving them more light during the day, which is a simple solution.
I saw in your TED Med talk that one of the symptoms of Alzheimer's is commonly fractured sleep, and that by exposing them to bright light during the day, it helped them maintain a deeper sleep pattern at night.
That's exactly, and why is that? It's back to when I explain about how sleep works, right? So what happens is that Alzheimer's patients still have the homeostatic system. So they're still accumulating sleep pressure, right? But they don't have their circadian system counteracting that sleepiness during the day and making them stay asleep at night. So what they do is that every 2 or 3 hours, they have so much sleep pressure that they nap and then they wake up and then they accumulate again another 2, 3, 4 hours. They accumulate sleep pressure, they nap again. So they don't have that consolidated sleep. To have the consolidated wakefulness during the day, sleepiness at night, you need your circadian system to be aligned with your external environment. And that's what the sunrise does. So all we did was bring sunrise to nursing homes. And that did the trick. It was a simple trick, but it did it. And I don't understand why not all the nursing homes in the world aren't doing that, because it's such a simple solution.
As well as efficacy in cancer patients, right? Yeah. And the efficacy in which the medicine will interact with the cancer cells was affected by light exposure. Is that correct?
Yeah, what was affected was, there's a couple of ways that you can affect that. I mean, we've done studies with myeloma transplant patients here at Mount Sinai, where we delivered brighter lights during the daytime hours. And what we saw was that there was a reduction in inflammation. There was an improvement in sleep. There was a reduction in depression. But also the other area is that circadian rhythms, I mean, different times of day will have different effects, or the medication will have different effects if given at different times of day, right? So what you can do is if you have an entrained circadian rhythm, you can then know, well, that certain type of drug is more effective if it's given at nighttime, while that one is more effective if it's given at the middle of the afternoon. But you need to have a synchronized circadian rhythm so that you know what nighttime and middle of the afternoon is for the body, not for your watch, but for your body. So the ability of delivering light that will maintain entrainment and help with delivering the right medication at the right time can help with increase efficacy and reduce side effects, which is a huge thing. But if you ask an oncologist, nobody's doing that. Nobody's even thinking about that. Everybody gives the chemotherapy, everybody in the morning, everybody working at that, you know, sort of like scheduling based on availability of beds in the hospitals and so on. Why don't we give a pump where you know what the circadian rhythm of this person is and you deliver the drug based on their circadian rhythms? I mean, it's a simple thing. We have precision medicine now. So those are the things that I hope to see in the future. And what light can do is can help make sure that the circadian system of a patient is synchronized and ready to receive certain drugs at certain times.
Such an empowering message that you're sharing. Because it's so damaging that we go through life believing that we are kind of set in the brains and bodies that we've been given. How often do you hear, oh, I've always been a poor sleeper. Oh, my vision has always been bad. I've just been, always had low energy during the day. But if you kind of flip that frame, is that, no, you can actually make these little shifts in your day that are so simple that can improve your sleep, improve your energy levels, improve your vision. I mean, that's a big one, right? People don't think about how they can improve eyesight just by looking at things. That's been a big one for me recently, is learning that just by looking at something far away from you as a habit, it can improve your eyesight. Like, wow, what an empowering reframe on the way that you can navigate life relatively simply too. It doesn't need to complicate your life at all. It can just be that you can create these little anchors throughout your day that set you on a whole new trajectory.
Yeah. And it's interesting. There's another area that it's not that it's emerging, because I've been hearing about it for some time, but I'm hearing more now, is the impact of daytime light in myopia in children, for example. So one of the things is that kids are not getting enough light during the daytime, and that's actually increasing the incidence of myopia. And they do have a hypothesis that it's associated with dopamine receptors in the eye and so on. But it's kind of interesting, because kids now don't go out and play anymore. Kids stay in front of a computer screen or an iPad playing games. And it's like, hey, why don't you just send your kids out to go outside and play? That's as simple as that. And it's just easy to keep them in a room, in a dark room with a TV on playing games.
Right. Well, an iPad pacifies a child very easily.
And it's amazing how you see like a 1-year-old or 2-year-old playing on an iPad. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe this.
But then the stereotype of the kid who's constantly buried in the iPad or the book, having to wear really thick glasses, makes sense. Whereas the athlete kid who's outside all the time playing soccer has great vision. And the impact as well of vision on athletics, right? Because if you don't have correct depth perception, if you can't see the ball coming at you, it really impacts your ability in kind of sport and play. So we think about strengthening our quads and biceps to become better athletes. We don't think about strengthening our eyesight.
Yeah, and if you go out, you maintain the synchrony. So you synchronize your circadian rhythms. And there has been some work looking at athlete performance. So they did studies, for example, with college kids. They tend to be delayed, right? So they tend to go to bed late and not like to wake up early. So what they showed is that if you delay the training for them, they actually do better, because they don't do well in early morning training. But what do? You start, you know, training normally starts in the early morning, right? You have to go out for a run early and, you know, get ready and so on. So the point is that if you can use light to move the circadian clock of these kids or these athletes so that they become earlier people, now they're going to perform better, because now you're at the peak performance based on their circadian system. And yeah, by the way, you can improve vision. And so the benefits are just amazing. And, you know, it's as simple as plan on being outdoors. And it's interesting about the pandemic, and we did a survey, we just published the paper on that, is, you know, I was very interested in understanding the sleep patterns during the pandemic, because if you think about it, suddenly we are all in our basements. And, you know, those of us who work at home, sometimes you can spend 2 or 3 days without getting out of your house, because why leave? You don't have to commute and you just stay home, right? And you stay in dim light basically 24 hours a day, whatever it is. So we did a survey. We got over 700 respondents during the shutdown last year. And it was clear, it was a very nice correlation between how many hours people spent outdoors and how they slept. So the longer they spent outdoors, if they were spending over 1 to 2 hours outdoors, they were sleeping a lot better, less anxiety, less depression than if they were spending less than 10 minutes or less than half an hour outdoors. Same thing with the space indoors. If they rated their space indoors as being brighter, they again were sleeping better, less depressed, less anxiety. So there's a clear correlation between how much light you get during the day, how well you sleep at night, and that can also impact depression, anxiety, mood, and, you know, a variety of other health outcomes.
I highlighted in Matt Walker's book, Why We Sleep, a section where he's talking about athlete performance and how they've linked Olympic world records to time of day.
Typically
around like 11 a.m. at the peak of your circadian rhythm, you're more likely to break a world record.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, is like when you're talking about East Coast and West Coast, right? Teams playing against each other, depending on where you're playing and the time of the game, you can bet on one team better than the other because you're going to get a team and a better performance than the other. So it's, nobody thinks about, actually, there are some athletes that they actually have trainers that are thinking about circadian rhythms and so on, because it's important. I mean, it's just being able to go in your peak performance, and you can do that by giving a light treatment and by shifting the biological clock so that you're now performing at your peak performance, regardless of what time of day it is. What really matters is your biological time. So
Right. So you could let's say it's a late night game for the West Coast team. You could expose the athletes to bright light before the game to set their circadian rhythm so that they would be coming into more peak performance during the game.
Yeah. So the East Coast team's going to go play on the West Coast, right? So the game is, say, at 8 o'clock at night. So if you think about it, you know, the East Coast guys, 8 o'clock at night is 11 o'clock at night for them.
Right.
So you actually need to give them morning light. So that you sort of like advance their clocks. In other words, you bring their clock to an earlier time. And then for the West Coast people is the opposite, right? Yeah. West Coast people, I said that in reverse. So the East Coast people, you want to bring their clock to an earlier time. So you want to delay their clock. For the West Coast people, you want to bring that to a later time. So you want to advance their clock. So you can give the exact light treatment. But here's the problem with it. I think that's one of the reasons why people don't do it, which I think it's an interesting concept, is when you think about popping a pill, right? You take a medication, you pop a pill, and you see the results in a couple of hours or whatever, when you have a headache or something like that. But the biological clock is slow. So you're not going to have a shift of 2 to 3 hours in just, you know, one day or, you know, with one pulse. You really need to start 2 to 3 days earlier and slowly shift your clock. So when you're talking about athletes, you really need to start the treatment for athletes 2 to 3 days before the game, so that when they get to the game, their biological clock had time to shift and move. So it does take a little bit of an effort to just go through this. And a lot of people just don't want to take the time to do it. They just say, I just want to take a pill, or I just want to find something a little bit faster and easier and so on. So I think that's one of the reasons why people don't even think about it, because when you're talking about entrainment, that's very easy, because you're talking about 10, 15 minutes a day. Go outside, see the sunrise, you're good. But when you're talking about shifting 2, 3, 4 hours like jet lag, you know, you fly to Europe, you fly to Asia, you're not going to synchronize in a day. It takes you a few days to get there. So you have to start earlier to be able to, you know, get re-entrained a little bit faster if you start a few days before your trip, for example. So it can be done, but in some cases, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, it can be a little bit more time consuming. let's put it that way, or slower than you will want.
So if you were hired to be the light exposure coach for a budding East Coast football team, and you knew that they were, and you knew that they were going to fly to the West Coast for a big game in a week's time, what regiment would you get these players on?
So what you want is you want to delay their clock, right? So you want them to be, to their biological clock to be 3 hours later. So in order to do that, you start 3 days before the trip, you start giving them light in the evening. Okay, so you can give them a couple of hours of light right before they go to bed or their bedtime. So if they go to bed at 10 o'clock, give them light from 8 to 10. Okay, and then you give them orange glasses or something that will shield them from morning light. And you do that 2 to 3 days before the shift, before their travel. And they should be, when they get there, they should be perfectly aligned with West Coast time. So let me tell you what we did, which was actually a pretty neat study. It's not with a team, but it was with Special Operations Forces. So we brought people from Guam to Troy, New York. Okay, so this was a 9-hour shift. So one of the very interesting things we did was rather than try to phase shift them by 9 hours in 2 days, which would be really hard because your clock is slow to do it, what we did is we held them in Guam time during the travel. And what they were doing is they were doing nighttime ops in New York time. So what happens is nighttime ops, so midnight in Troy, New York, really is 9 o'clock in the morning in Guam. So they're actually doing the nighttime op, but their biological clock is in daytime mode. So the key was to hold them in Guam time because their operations were done during the nighttime. So you actually have two options. One is you start shifting them so that they match the clock time at destination and they're, you know, at the peak performance at destination. Or if you don't have time to shift them, like 9 hours, which is a big shift, you now hold them and then you do your operation in a time where it's equivalent to their biological day. So you can play with it depending on what problem you're trying to solve as a coach.
I mean, it's, you could almost, it would be an interesting, it would be an interesting thought experiment to go through various historical events, like famous battles, famous, you know, Super Bowl games, like, and to see the light exposure and sleep patterns of the opposing forces or teams during that time and how it could all be determined just on who had the most optimized, you know, light and sleep pattern on the day.
I mean, you could even look at the Tokyo games, right? That were just, I wonder if there's a difference between the first week and the second week, because, you know, even if you go there ahead of time, you don't really go there too much ahead of time. So by the time you start the Olympics, probably people that came from, you know, the United States or Europe or so on, they weren't really in sync with Japan's time yet. But then after a week there, they were. So you would expect that they actually would be doing better after a week than in the first week. So it would be interesting to look at that too. Said, how did the US do in the first week and in the second week compared to the Asians, for example, that were on the right time zone and so on. So I agree with you that there's a lot of interesting research that can be done just by looking at data from the games or, you know, activities that have happened in that area.
So we've been talking a lot about how light exposure impacts sleep. And we haven't really gotten into why sleep is important. It's something that I've been so deeply entrenched in over the last couple months. It almost it feels like, oh yeah, yeah, of course, everyone knows sleep is the fountain of youth. But you know, still there are a lot of these cultural memes out there, like, yeah, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I only sleep 4 hours a night. You know, people use it as kind of this macho brag. Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say to me if I said, you know, I'm a high performer, I only need 4 hours a night, I kick ass, and, you know, sleep is for the lazy. How would you respond to me if I said that?
Well, there's the nice way and there's the no nice way. I'll do it.
Give me the not nice way. I don't need you to be polite.
I think it's BS, first of all, because I don't think you're really performing at your peak. I think it's just, it's, you know, I think you're just kidding yourself by thinking that you are doing well by doing that. Now, having said that, I have to say, and that's excluding, there are people that do have the short sleep genes that can get by with 4 hours and they are perfectly fine. These are not common to find, but they exist, okay? So setting that aside, assuming you're a normal person, you don't have the short sleep gene, it's BS. I mean, you need your sleep. And when we did a study where we put people at five hours sleep a night for 1 week, when we recruited the subjects, they said, oh, that's easy. I do that every week. It doesn't matter. I can do it. When they came to the lab at the end of the 5 days, they said, I could not do it. I thought I slept 5 hours a night. Obviously, I sleep much more than that because I could not bear functioning in 5 hours sleep. And that was only for 5 days. So first of all, I think that the people that say that, they're full of crap, because I don't really think you can function at 4 hours of sleep a night. I think you say it because you want to look macho, but I doubt that's the case. We need sleep. We just need it. I mean, you are miserable if you're not sleeping. And there's so many negative health consequences. Now, what I think it's most interesting, when I did my PhD thesis, my advisor wanted me to answer the question, why we sleep? And I said, I want to graduate. I am not going to try to answer that question because I don't think anybody has answers to that question. I think we know now a lot more than we knew 10 years ago. And you're seeing that sleep is associated with learning, memory, and that's, you know, the work that Matt Walker does. I mean, he's done a lot of work looking at that. We're seeing a strong relationship with Alzheimer's disease risk. So it's the cleaning up the debris in the brain. So you're not really, by not sleeping all night or a certain number of hours a night, you're not cleaning up the debris that you generate during the day while awake. And that can lead to accumulation of plaques, which is the hallmark for Alzheimer's disease. There's been work looking at the association between short sleep and increased risk for diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's not just being sleepy during the day. It's a lot more than that. So what I would tell you, don't do it, because it's just not a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I've also found that the impact on creativity is so pronounced. And, you know, a lot of companies' success and failure is really determined by the ideas that are coming from it. And that was probably the point of Matt Walker's book that I wanted to underscore the most, which is the contribution of ideas that humans can bring to the table when they're well slept is so much greater than when they're not. And if you really zoom out to the plight of humanity right now, we need good ideas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
more than anything. And if absolutely. They're if that is so deeply connected to our sleep, to be able to bring those ideas into the world, you know, that is the foundation of our potential as a species, really. Yeah. And I don't mean to sound melodramatic, but it really does seem like the case.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's so many things that go wrong when you're sleep deprived. You know, you're going to blow up very easily. I mean, things like, you know, you can pull a gun just because you were sleep deprived and somebody teased you about something, and you're just going to do it without even knowing you're doing it, without even perceiving. So they're little things that it's just not worth it. It really is not. You know, I learned when I did my master's thesis, I did it with night shift workers. So I was giving light at start, middle, and end of a day shift and a night shift schedule for nurses in an ICU in South Bend. So I wasn't sleeping more than 3 hours in a row, because I was like Alzheimer's patients in a way, because I had to be at the hospital every 4 hours throughout the 24 hours to give the light to the nurses. And I did that for 30 days. That changed the way I dealt with sleep. I never, ever, like, I never stopped or did anything that would disrupt my sleep after that. The way I felt after those 30 days, I cannot describe how awful I felt. And I cherish sleep now. I really do. It's like sleep for me is just, and listen, I'm very productive during the day. I'm very active. I write a lot of proposals. I write a lot of papers. I used to teach. I'm a very active person, but I will sleep 9 o'clock at night, 8, 9 o'clock at night. I'm in bed. I'm sleeping at 8, 9 o'clock at night, which is kind of weird, but hey, I'm not giving up on my sleep. I'm just not going to do it.
So what is the research that you are most excited about moving forward? You strike me as a curious person who has kind of made your way into a great career for your personality.
You know, it's interesting. I am excited, and I, you know, we moved to Sinai recently. The whole center moved to Sinai. And I always say that it's like the kid in a candy store, in a toy store. I mean, I think the opportunities are unbelievable. And to me, what I'm excited about is the ability to use light, which is what we talked about. It's a simple thing, right? It's absolutely simple to be able to increase the amount of light during the day and reduce at night so that you sleep well. So what I am excited about is being able to expand that to different populations. So, you know, we are working a lot with Alzheimer's patients' disease. We're going to start working with Parkinson's disease. We're working with cancer patients. We're going to be working with spinal cord injury patients and try to help them with sleeping better and reducing depression in this population. We're working with the Navy. We continue to do work with, you know, submariners, people that are in submarines where they pretty much are on constant light. So how can you help change the lighting in submarines for that? So my excitement is really being able to bring that very easy solution into changing the way people do lighting in the built environment. I really want to get to the application part. How do you actually change the built environment? And I think that you know, I'm trying to start here at Mount Sinai in the hospital. How do you change the lighting in the hospital to help people sleep better? But we're also doing things like giving people horizontal, vertical night lights to help with maintaining postural control and stability and reduce falls. I mean, the incidence of falls in nursing homes or in hospitals, it's amazing. So just giving them night lights that gives them these vertical horizontal cues, it's enough to help them with their balance control. So now they know what's horizontal, what's vertical, and they can orient themselves in the space. So we're testing that out in the hospital right now. We're getting ready to do a study like that. So I think that it was a long answer, but in short, I mean, what really excites me is the ability to use light as a tool to just become a non-pharmacological intervention in any disease that will just be an adjunct to any drug treatment. But what lighting is doing is actually, you know, improving, minimizing the need for drugs, or increasing the impact of drugs on people. And this is only through entrainment of the circadian system, improving sleep, and the rest is just the consequence of that.
So I gotta ask, do you ever wear sunglasses?
Do I wear sunglasses?
Yeah, outside? In the day, like it's such a, I'm just thinking like there's been such a marketing onslaught for that, basically that bright light is bad, right? That's like the primary messaging campaign of sunglass companies. Are you the arch nemesis of the whole sunglass industry?
No, here's the thing. I wear it for, first of all, comfort. And second, because you also want to protect your eyesight, because outside you can get UV and, you know, you can get light that it's actually, it can increase your risk for cataract and so on. But what happens is in a bright sunny day, you have so much light out that even if you wear sunglasses and you have only 10% transmittance through the sunglass, you still have 10 to 20 times more light than what you have in the built environment. So absolutely, you can continue to wear your glasses and you're still going to get enough light. And what's interesting, if you go out in the morning, you don't need, because the morning is not as bright as the midday, you don't have the need for that sunglass. So I don't wear sunglasses in the morning when I commute into work, but I do wear when I go out at lunchtime, and I do wear in the afternoon. So I'm not against, because there's so much that even filtering out, you can still get enough of what you need to.
Have you done any research on polarized versus non-polarized or types of sunglasses that you recommend? You know,
it's interesting. I personally haven't done it. I know some of my colleagues have done it. And I think that it's okay to do polarized. It actually, it's a good thing to do the polarizing. First of all, it helps with the colors actually look much, much nicer when you're wearing those polarizers. And it does feel, you know, if you polarize or you get out the short wavelength, that's what you want, because those are the wavelengths that are, you know, the shorter wavelengths, the 440 and even the UV and so on. You do want to filter that out when you're wearing sunglasses. But I haven't done it myself, but I know that there has been some work done. My colleagues have done.
Mariana, your work is so fascinating.
I have to say it is. And it is interesting because when I moved to Sinai, I was very worried because I said, oh my God, you know, it's a bunch of physicians, it's everybody doing drug discovery and so on. And here I come with light, you know, it's kind of like, I am telling you, everybody's fascinated because everybody sees the potential. So it's fascinating that I really want people to start using light. I mean, I think the same way that Matt Walker is so passionate about how important sleep is, I see light and dark, bright days, dark nights. It's just as important to help you sleep better. So it's kind of like goes hand in hand. It's not just the sleep, but it's, you know, you need to get that good light dark pattern to be able to sleep well. So it's really cool. It is really, really cool.
You're showing people the light.
Yeah, that's right. Don't be like a fish, right? TED Med talk is like, what's water? And it's true. People just take it for granted. Do not take lighting for granted. Get better lighting in your space.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Where can people learn more about your work or get in touch with you?
Yeah, we obviously the Mount Sinai, we have a, it's called Lighted Health Research Center. So if people just Google or look for the Mount Sinai website, Lighted Health Research Center, and we're putting a lot of the information there now. And obviously feel free to email me and, you know, be in touch with me without a problem.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
That's our show. I'm going to play you out with a song called Flashing Lights by Sourgrass. And you can head over to my website, kyle.surf, to sign up for my newsletter. Get out in the water, whatever body of water you're closest to. I promise it will make your day better.
Song I can sing. So